everybody. Welcome back to the Comedy Castle podcast. I'm your host, Joel Fragamenti. Going to tell you what's going on this week at Mark Ridley's Comedy Castle. And a little bit of next week. How about that? All right, let's get into it. Thursday the 16th, that might be the day you're listening to the show. It's going up a little bit later this week. But Tara Konostrocki is headlining for one night. And Thursday the 16th at 7:30 p.m., Tara's been around touring with comics like Joey Diaz and Josh Wolfe. She hosts the Chaz Palminteri Show podcast, and she's just a really funny comic. Real big social media following, Italian-American, one of my people. So that's tonight for most of you if you listen to this on Thursday the 16th at 7:30 p.m. And then we've got Preacher Lawson coming in for three nights. Friday, Saturday, Sunday, I'll be talking to Preacher here in just a couple of seconds. You'll hear me talk to Preacher, who is a funny dude, been all over the world. You'll hear us talk about that. America's Got Talent, we'll talk about that. We'll talk about hair. It's a cool interview. I like Preacher a lot. And we're talking to him. He's our weekend headliner. So, you know, the usual, no Thursday, because we got Tara on Thursday. But 7:15 and 9:45 are your Friday shows on the 17th, 7 p.m. and 9:30 on Saturday the 18th. And then Sunday the 19th, a single show at 7 p.m. So come out and see Preacher Lawson. Why not? See the Preacher on Sunday if you want to see the Preacher on Sunday. Love Preacher. All right. And then I also have an interview today with Josh Adams. Josh, of course, a favorite at the Comedy Castle and really one of the real jewels of the Detroit comedy scene, I would say, is Josh Adams. Such a great reputation. You guys know him. We've interviewed him in the past. You might have seen him on Hard Knocks roasting the Detroit Lions. That was an awesome segment. And Josh just continues to impress. And it's one show next week. And I didn't know if I'd have time with next week's podcast. So I said, Josh, let's put this show up a week early. We'll put you at the end of the Preacher Lawson episode. So I got about 20 new minutes with Josh, which is really great. We talk a lot about the local comedy scene, what that's like. And he's wise, he's funny, and very smart. One of my favorites, absolutely. Talk about Detroit comedy. Might be the top guy right now, Josh Adams. I don't know. No disrespect to anyone else, but he's amazing. Love Josh. So you get to hear 20 minutes with Josh. We had 20 minutes with Preacher, 20 minutes with Josh. Pretty cool show. Yeah. Speaking of cool shows, just had the Advanced Comedy Class Showcase on Tuesday night. I want to thank everyone who came out to that. We had a nice little turnout for that one. And the students really kicked ass. These students, we had so much fun backstage. You know, people are nervous. You're always nervous at a thing like that. But, man, I got to tell you, it's very rewarding for me as a teacher to see what my students can do. Some of them I knew would do great. Some of them I wasn't sure. Maybe some people didn't even do as well as I thought. But I think everybody had a good time, from the audience to the comics, myself, the staff of the Comedy Castle. It was a great time. And again, I want to plug it. And last time I'm going to get to plug it. But the new class, April 18th, call the Comedy Castle at 248-542-9900 if you want to be a part of that. This is for people who've done a little bit of stand-up. Maybe you did the 101 class at the club. Maybe you've been doing it on your own for a little bit. You want to work with a professional like me. I also performed on Tuesday. I thought it went pretty well. Yeah. Wrote a joke about Royal Oak about a minute before I went on stage and opened with it. There you go. By the way, don't do that. That could go poorly, but it went well in my case. Anyway, fun times. Love the Advanced Comedy Class. It's a favorite thing I do all week. If you want to be part of the next one, call the club. All right. It's Saturday. We need some people. Let's go. Sign up. I know it's spring break, but you can get it. You can do it. Now, we might as well do it now. Why put it off? Don't put off the rest of your life. Isn't that from some movie? Sleepless in Seattle, something like that. Got a barking dog. I don't know if you guys can hear that. Get him to come in here.
Hey, Baxter, come see Daddy. Bax?
I think Baxter's coming. Baxter, you coming? What's all the noise, pal? Dogs are freaking out with these storms. I'm sure some of you are dealing with that, too. Come on, buddy. I'm doing the podcast. You want to say hi? You want to say hi? I'll give you the mic. You got anything to say? Hi, Bax. He don't like, he's afraid. No, no, no. It's okay. Here. Dog's afraid of a microphone. Why are you afraid of the microphone? Do you want to say hi? You say hi to people? All right. No dog. If you heard him barking. God, the storms, man. These dogs are freaking out. But, all right, let's get into the interviews. I apologize for Baxter. He got a little anxiety about performing here on putting him on the spot here on the podcast. It's my boy Baxter. Some of you people have seen Baxter. He's a little Yorkie poo. And he's a cute boy. Not the most confident little guy, though. He's woofing at somebody outside. All right, let's throw it to these interviews. Come on. Start with Preacher Lawson. We'll go right into Josh Adams. Give you about 40 minutes of fun with these guys. I love both of these guys. And we got some great shows coming up. Here's Preacher Lawson, everybody. Ladies and gentlemen, on the other end of my line, it's a pleasure to speak to a man who hasn't been in our club for a little bit. It's long overdue, the return of Preacher Lawson. How you doing, Preacher?
Hey, what's up, man?
I'll tell you, you're up. It's your week at the Comedy Castle, and it's going to be a good one. Five shows.
Yeah, I can't wait. Five shows?
Five shows.
Let's do it, baby.
You sound surprised by five shows.
Yeah, I mean, five shows, this economy is impressive.
Yeah, well, exactly. It's like, hey, if they keep buying tickets, we'll do 10 shows. Probably not.
Yeah, there we go. But, 10 but shows is great. 10 shows I'm doing in the arena somewhere.
10 shows, please.
That's what Comedy Castle is. I think it's the biggest comedy club in America, right?
It's one of the biggest clubs. We seat almost 400 people when it's sold out. So.
Yeah, you seat almost 400 people. That's, yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah.
400 people.
Yeah, well, 400 fans of yours and your people at our club have been showing up since, I want to say you came in either 17 or 18 for the first time.
Yeah, I came in 2017.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah, and that was like a one-night deal, and then it was like, we got to get Preacher back, and then I think the next time he came back, you ended up really, really impressing us with your fans, how loyal they were to you, coming back every time.
Yes, great. I mean, you know what? I love anyone that supports me, so I try to, like, you know, I think as long as you're funny, they keep coming back, right? Why do people watch me anyways? To laugh. Exactly. So if I stop making people laugh, they're going to stop coming. Right. But I'm going to peek. I just stuttered. Edit this out. Edit that out. Do
edit
not
that
put
out.
That in there.
I'm making
people
up.
Do not need to know that I stutter. Anyway, no, but yeah, I think people, I'm funny. I think I'm funny.
You
this
are.
New hour I
agree,
have,
yeah.
I'm working on, I think it's fine. All you right. know, well, some people don't agree. So it's just like,
well, but that's what we're seeing this weekend. New stuff. People haven't, even if they've seen all the specials, it's they're getting new stuff.
Brand new stuff. I did three specials that I dropped and the material I'm doing this weekend, you haven't seen any.
That's terrific. That sounds great, man. I was watching the last one. Actually, here's a question from the Comedy Castle staff, because they knew I was talking to you. And they said this to me. They said, and then I was watching the special and I heard you talk about it a little bit. Preacher Lawson. Yeah, well, yeah, I was watching it today. Well, of course, I'm going to interview you. I got to keep up with what you're up to. Come on.
My man.
They're like, Preacher has braids now. He has long hair. He doesn't look like he used to. He changed his look. Ask him what's going on with his hair. And I said, okay. And then I watched a new special, and you look like I remember you. Then I watched some older stuff, and there's braids, and then you're talking about when you were a kid, you had long hair. Explain the hair.
Well, first off, they're locks. They're not braids.
Locks. Okay. Hey, I'm learning.
Yeah,
I'm learning. Locks.
Yeah, yeah.
All
right. I got you. So, but yeah, I got locks in the you know, during 2020 when we were in prison,
you
know,
go, yep.
When we were, yeah, when we were all locked up and was stuck in the house, couldn't get a haircut. I just grew my hair out. And
there
so I just started twisting and then there we go. And then I grew it out and I liked it. Then it got real long.
Yeah.
And then I was like, this is too long. This is too long. It's getting in my cereal at this point. So I stopped. I cut it. And yeah, man, I like it. I this is just easier. Having short hair is just easier.
I agree with that. I had someone who had, I had long hair to my shoulders for the whole 90s.
Oh, did you?
Whole 90s, yep.
Oh, man. Do you have hair now?
I got hair. I'm in my 50s, but it's short, you know, but it looks nice. But yeah, the long hair is hard to deal with. But I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it. But it's hard to deal with.
And people that like long hair, oh my gosh, they like long hair. You know what I mean?
They let you know, yeah.
They let you know, man. They love your hair, but you know.
Yeah, I enjoyed. Now this weekend, as I was told here, reading the emails here with management, you got it's a whole family affair this weekend at the Comedy Castle.
I'm bringing my whole family.
Tell us who's coming.
Yeah. I'm bringing my mom. She goes up. She opens up the set that my brother goes up, and then I go up last.
Nice. That's wild. Now, what's it like traveling with the whole family? Does that make it a little more? Is there a little more pressure? Is this kind of like when you were a kid going on family trips? How's it different than that?
It's great. I mean, it feels a lot like when I was a kid on family trips, except I'm the parent, and so that. There's, you know, don't touch that. You got some McDonald's money. That's me now. So but everything else is pretty like, you know, similar. It's we're just joking around and a lot of, I don't get to see my family much. They don't live in the same state as me. So we get to spend time on the weekends and, you know, the money in house.
That's right. Well, we enjoyed. Yeah, yeah. Justin's been with you at our club in the past. He's a great job. So.
Yeah, yeah.
Good to see him.
Yeah.
It'll be good to see him.
Yeah.
Now tell me this. I read Wikipedia about Preacher Lawson. First thing it says, Preacher Lawson moved 20 times as a kid. What was going on there?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. You got to ask my mom. I think she's a drug dealer. I'm not sure. You're laughing. I'm serious. So I don't know why, but she just moved around a lot.
Yeah.
And I was seven. I was seven at the time, and I was eight. And I was like, you know, I was nine. So I didn't have a choice. I couldn't be like, Mom, I know you feed me.
Yeah.
You know, but no more moving around. So, but she just moved a lot. I think my mom. You know, she was running from somebody, but it's all good.
They didn't find her because she's going to be at the club this weekend. If you're still looking for Preacher's mom.
If you're looking for my mom.
Yes.
Yeah, that is kind of crazy. I think about that. I'm like, man, if I was actually running from somebody, that'd be a terrible. This is a terrible job. This is a terrible job. You're never going to find me unless you come this weekend in the Tommy Castle. Like, you know, it's crazy.
I'll keep him out of the backstage. That's my job. So I'll protect you to some degree.
Thank you so much.
And let's talk about most people. I think a lot of people get so much great exposure and a lot of fans from doing America's Got Talent. And as in my research, not only did you do America's Got Talent, you ended up doing Britain's Got Talents and Champions Tournaments. Is that not a lot of pressure to do? Because you've already established yourself. And to do all of these shows, I mean, is that a thing that you thrive on? Does that drive you in some way, the pressure of being on those things?
I don't feel any pressure.
No. Okay.
Ever. Yeah. No, I feel pressure when I'm like trying to talk to a girl or something, you know, you know, because then they're going to say, no, I don't know what they're going to say, but that's like me doing my jokes. I think they're funny, you know, so I'm just going to do my competitions. There's no pressure because all I have to do is my best. Right. And if I do my best, everything that happens after that, you know, it don't matter.
No,
it does not matter.
Yeah.
You know, also I've lost, you know, it's not like I'm winning and then I'm like, oh, I got to keep the streak alive. I'm keeping the streak alive no matter where I go, baby. Team loser. You know, I just keep losing, man. I'm like a professional loser. People think that I got like second place on America's Got Talent. And it's like, no, I just lost to her first. But it's all
listen, you're 2-3 dogs and a kid away from winning that show. That's what I'm saying, man.
I'm saying I got to get some girl pregnant and raise a kid that can sing, dance, and swallow fire, and it's over. It's over.
But I mean, what benefit that you get out of it? Though? I mean, the fact that you know that national exposure. everywhere. And I've taken you, you've toured England as well then at that point, huh?
Yeah, we did a tour in Europe. I was in England. I was in,
yeah,
I was in, yeah, I went, I did an Australia tour. I mean, I was in Scotland. I was in Scotland. I was in Ireland.
Right.
I was in Portugal. I went to Northern Ireland as well, mm-hmm. Which is part of England. I didn't know that. You know, I went to Norway. I did a bunch of European places. I went to Australia. I went to Africa to visit. I never performed there, but we're getting a tour ready for next year.
Okay.
And so that's going to be a good time to to do comedy at the motherland.
Yeah. I mean, that's exciting. Do you ever feel like being an outsider or being somebody, you know, in Norway or, yeah, like, do you feel like this ain't my people and and that's a strength, or does it make you feel a little bit like you got to win these people over?
Well, I don't feel like, I've always felt like I've never really, it wasn't my home. You know what I mean? Like, I went, like, yeah. I didn't like super fit in. I think that's the reason I'm, you know, so, you know, I think charismatic, or I get along with a lot of people, because I've been in situations where I'm not like, you know, I was born in Portland, Oregon. I was the only black kid in my school. Okay. And I moved to Memphis, Tennessee when I was 9. And they were like, what's that? What's do you smell like? Bing ring? You know, you smell like you like soccer, you know, like, you know what I mean? So like, I've been everywhere. I've been so many different places. So it's like, it's cool to go to places where I like to go to places that have nothing to do with me. You know what I mean? Because if I go to a place that has nothing to do with me, I learn so much. I already know. I remember when I first started doing stand-up, I sounded a lot like, you know, my favorite comedians.
Yeah.
I sounded just like Arnaz J or, you know, Kevin Hart or like just these comedians I watched all the time. You could tell I watched them because I was obsessed with them. I was like, oh, man. And then I remember someone said, oh, you sound like this person. So I was like, okay. I just stopped watching them and I started watching other comedians that sounded nothing like that. We're low energy.
Yeah.
That were dark comedy. I'm, you know, family friendly, but like when you, I watch like dark comedy, Anthony Jeselnik, you know, like Louis C.K. Because their comedy styles are so different from mine that I'm like, okay, I can pick up things that won't be as obvious, and I won't remind anyone of that because I can't be that person. So so I just always like to go. I don't know. I'm not gonna say enemy territory. I can't think of the word. Yeah. but you know, like something that's a contrast of who I am as a person.
Right.
I love it.
That's great. Well, that's amazing. Yeah. To have the experiences of all those different cultures, all those different people, and they're all laughing at your stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. It's awesome, man. It's awesome. Yeah.
All right. Tell me about this, because this is a thing I've struggled with. I've tried it, but I'm reading about you, and I find out that you are a vegan. I've done veganism. I've done very well on veganism, but I can't seem to keep it up being in a relationship with a non-vegan. Help me out.
Yeah, you know what? Okay, go ahead. I'm listening.
No, I think that's it. I lost a tremendous amount of weight being a vegan. It's great.
Oh, nice. So you liked it? You're just telling me you like being a vegan?
I like being a vegan, but I also like like having a wife.
See, that's the problem.
Yeah, she don't want to eat what I eat.
Yeah, see, man? You got to be gay, man. That's the issue. So, no, I'm just playing. But like,
I could have married a vegan.
I get it. Yeah. It is, or marry a vegan. You marry a vegan. Those are the two options: gay or BB. I think you know, I anyone. I mean, the vegan community is like almost 90% women.
Yeah.
So I don't think you know. I think if a guy is not in a relationship as a vegan, it's because he doesn't want to be in a relationship.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
You know, like there's, you know, but I think as a vegan, it's like, for me, I feel better. I feel healthy.
Yeah.
You know, they say it's better for the earth and your body. So I'm like, all right, if I felt bad, I wouldn't be vegan. You know, I just wouldn't do it.
Yeah.
You know?
No, I felt great. So, it was just a social thing about, you know,
I'm
going to go on this date and go to a restaurant, and what am I eating? You know? And it's a struggle.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a struggle.
Also, 99% of people aren't vegan. So, you know, like most people that you approach, I think it's going to be like, I don't agree. You know?
Yeah,
like,
right.
Very hostile environment.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, I've been vegan for 9 years.
Nice. That's great.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the most successful time of your life, I guess.
I know, right?
I'm putting it out there, but I don't know if that's true.
As soon as I started making money to buy steak, I was like, I don't want it.
Yeah. All right. Tell me about, you know, the new special dropped. Like I said, I was watching that today. You're working on the new one. You've got a Don't Tell special that you said was dropping soon.
Just dropped.
Okay. How, coming up with material as a comedian myself, I'm a teacher of comedians. What is the secret to coming up with this? What is your writing style? When do you sit down and write this stuff? Does it come out of you on stage? What's your process there for coming up with so much material?
Yeah, so it's crazy. I feel like there's a, you know, there's like a formula, I think, to come up with material, right? So it's just exaggeration, you know, a switch up.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like you just, that's, I mean, it's it. It's just you exaggerate and the punchline has to be something you said in the beginning where people don't agree with you, uh-huh. and then you make sense at the end, right?
You.
So that's all it is, right?
Yeah.
So everything can be a joke.
Yeah.
Everyone has an opinion, you know?
Right.
Everyone, if you have an opinion that's wild and then people are like, what? And at the end, it makes sense. People will laugh out of like, oh, that's all they're laughing at, you know?
Yeah.
Or if they can't, if they don't, if the, it's just you have to come up with something that someone doesn't like see coming. Because if they see it coming, it's not fun. They're like, we've seen that.
Yeah.
You know, it's like a movie. That's why that's why I like, this don't work as well as like, when people are like, oh, play that favorite song of mine. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like people still want you to do bits, right? They're like, do that one bit. So it's like, they like it, but it's like, you know, it's nostalgia.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? It's nice.
Right.
It's more so nostalgia than it is like, I can listen to Michael Jackson all day.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like
me
I can
too.
Just listen to him all day.
Yeah.
I'm not listening to my favorite comedians all day because I already knew what happened.
Yeah.
You know?
And that's how it works, is to keep your people, the fans that come to see you don't want that stuff necessarily. Or even if they say they do, you know it's not going to be as good as if they got something fresh.
No, it's not. This is the thing, man. I remember someone told me this, and it's 100% true. If you do a set and you crush, people have a good time, they're going to laugh, they're going to come back and see you most of the time. Most people are going to come back and see you. Now, if you do that same joke, those same jokes you did last time, they're going to laugh and they're not going to come back to see you, though. They're not going to come back to see you again.
Right.
You know, if you do the same material, if you don't have to do like a whole new hour, but it's like half your set got to be brand new.
Yeah.
You could do maybe 50, you know, like maybe 25% of the old jokes and 25% of like crowd work or of questions or.
Yeah.
Some kind of something that's different, but 75, like a majority of your set got to be different.
Right.
You know,
well, that's great advice. I mean, that's really nailing it as far as people, you know, I've asked this question to a lot of comedians and that's the most eloquent, well thought out answer I think I've ever gotten.
Oh, really?
I think so.
That's cool. That's awesome.
I think so. I don't know. I mean, sometimes I feel like comedians don't even think about it. They go, whatever. I'm doing this. I'm doing that. And they'll come back. But, you know, that's a nice, I like to hear that. And I think the fans of yours want to hear that, too, if they're thinking about, well, you know, I went to them, but it was, you know, Comedy Castle. I don't know when the last show was, if it was 19 or 20. So it's been a while.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, they're going to have like a new style. Like my comedy's like different from like, you know, from the last time they seen me. But if they've been keeping up with my special, they've noticed a transition in the evolution. So
well, sure, and you just look how many hundreds of shows are underneath your belt. You just got to be better.
I know.
You got to be better.
Yeah. How long have you been on stand up?
I've been doing stand up since 99, but I sort of retired from the road in 12 to take a job with Mr. Ridley at the club.
So what would the best advice you would give?
Well, what I tell
you've seen so many different.
Well,
you know.
I would tell people just try to make a connection with the audience and whatever you're talking about should be something that they relate to themselves on some level. Meaning that, you know, you're trying to talk about, you know, you are a guy, talk about your life. People can relate to your life, your opinions about celebrities and politics, Even though there's comedians that are great that do that kind of stuff, as an unknown, you're really going to make a human connection when you're talking about the way you grew up or your wife or your husband or your children. Those are the things, or your job, things that people are doing themselves.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome advice.
Yeah. I mean, as a new comedian. When people know who you are, I feel like you have a lot more leeway to get away with whatever you want. That's sort of the position that you're in now. People know what you're going to bring to the stage. But as a newcomer, you better bring something that they can relate to.
What advice would you give to someone that's not a newcomer?
Someone that's been doing it
20 years.
Someone that's not a newcomer? Keep writing. And it's exactly what you said. I think that's a great thing. If you can keep coming up with material and people feel like every time they see you, it's a new thing and that it's a better thing. And I also think that comedians who feel like, you know, when you write, even if you don't think it's as good as the stuff that you've been doing, it will get there. If you keep doing it, you have to go out and do it in front of people and make it work for you. Do lots of shows.
Yeah.
Do lots of shows. I don't care where you're at. Do lots of shows. I tell that to newcomers, and I agree with veterans. The more shows you do, take yourself out of that comfort zone, at least for some of them. You know?
What do you think, like, comedy is going right now? Like, so it's such a weird, right? Yeah. There was, like, a comedy boom in the 80s. And in the 90s, they got, like, that's when, like, comedy started going, like, it started going, like, almost like now, right? Yeah. Where it was all over TV. They had Comic View. Mm-hmm. They have Comedy Central Presents. You know, they have the HBO specials, and they had like the newcomer, blah, blah, blah. They had all that. Yeah. And then, you know, and then it kind of died down. It felt like in 2000, like it was still around.
Yeah.
They had like, you know, that's when they had like major stadium acts, like, you know, and then, mm-hmm. you know, Dan Cook or, you know.
Yeah. And then the pandemic kind of cleaned the slate. Now we got a whole new group of people. But I think if you're coming up from social media, you have to understand that a lot of the reason that people are coming to see you is because they just want that picture with you. They just want to see the guy from their feed. They want a picture. They want to say, hey, I saw you. And if your act isn't good, you're going to be a flash in the pan. You're not going to be able to sell those tickets. Like we've talked about in this interview, right? Coming back 2, 3, 4 times to see us, seeing you every year, every 2 years locally or wherever you end up being. If people want to get on a plane and fly to your Vegas show or something, well, they better know that they're getting something really good because they're going to do it once and that's all you got.
Exactly.
Yeah. Sounds like we agree, dude.
I agree with you. Yeah, we do agree.
Well, let me make a final statement here, and that is if you come this weekend to see Preacher Lawson and his family at the Comedy Castle. We got 5 shows. We got a Sunday show. You're going to have a great time. I always enjoy watching you on stage. I enjoy working with you. You're a complete pro and one of the nicest dudes I've ever dealt with.
Oh, thank you. That's awesome. I really appreciate that, brother. I'm excited to be here this weekend with my family and see you. And I hope I'm curious of what you think of the show.
Absolutely. Well, if you want to talk, I'll let you know. Usually, I'm going to tell you it's a great show, even if it's, you know, it is what it is. Here's the thing, but here's the thing that I learned from working in a comedy club and being a guy who wasn't having to fight. Like, being on a show with you is different than watching you as an employee of the club. Because I'm never.
Why do you feel that way?
Because I'm not comparing to, well, I wonder how I would have done. Or, you know, like if you see somebody kill you, like, I'm gonna do that good. Or I do watch this. I'll do better than him. But what the thing that I always look for when I look at comedy, and I didn't look at this way when I was a real active performer, even though like I performed at the club last night for 7 minutes, you know, I'm still doing a little bit. But does the audience have a great time? I'm watching the audience now more as a staff member, and I'm looking at people and I'm seeing that the people are having a great time and the comic is making that connection. It's not a thing I could ever do when it was just me on stage. That's kind of where I'm at now. The people, when I know a comedian's great, it's because the audience is engaged in a different way. The more engaged they are, I know the better that comedian is.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah,
and that
sounds good.
That's you. You're all those things.
Almost. You said what?
You're all of those things. You're connected. They love you. It's nice, man. It's a great time. Listen, Preacher, let's get you out of here. This is a great talk. Let's have them pay money to hear the rest of you.
Absolutely. My man, thank you so much for your time, man.
Hey, thank you so much, man. It was a pleasure talking to you. I'll see you this weekend, Preacher.
I see you.
Okay, bye. All right, bye-bye. Ladies and gentlemen, on the other end of my line, it's a pleasure to welcome back to this show a frequent guest, but a great guest, one of Detroit's finest comedians. I can't say the best, but you know what I mean? You're here. You're the best.
Yeah, I got it. I got it. I'll take that.
The best one talking to me right now, anyway. It's Josh Adams. What's up, dude?
Yeah, man. What's up, Joe, man? What's up?
Well, it's great talking to you. You got one night.
One night, man, at Mark Ridley's Comedy Castle.
That's right.
Man, one of the greatest clubs in the country, dog.
So you got to, if you want to see Josh, you got one chance this time.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, get there, man. And spend money, man, so they'll bring me back.
That's April 23rd, 7:30. I thought I'd have you on a little bit early so we could promote. Why not, right?
Always good to talk to you. You know what it is, man. We don't get to see each other as much as we used to. Bart's is gone.
Yeah, Bart's is gone. And sometimes I go to New Way and they're like, well, Josh came just after you left or something like that. You know, we're always in that.
Yeah. I had to cut back, dog. I just had a kid, so I don't get to get out as much as I want to. So I kind of open mic here and there. But, yeah, that's still one of the best mics in the city if you want to go.
Yeah, New Way.
In front of a terrible audience. That's the place to go.
But let me tell you something. That place is different when you're on stage, that open mic.
I mean, but you know how it is, man.
Yeah.
Like, if you can turn a bad audience into a listening audience, then an attentive audience, like it's going to be at the Comedy Castle.
Yeah.
It's like, it just child's play. You have a better show. Yeah. They're going to enjoy it more. So it's just like, it's a part of the exercise.
It is. It's like having the donut on the bat when you're taking
there
your
you
swings.
There you go.
Do that open mic. Get out there, young students. Young comedy people. I just had those folks last night at the club. It was fun.
Yeah, man.
But so what's been going on with you? It's been probably a year since we talked.
Yeah, man. Just consistently just staying busy, man. Like I'm booked.
Yeah.
I can't complain about that. I lost my voice in Lima, Ohio. You know, you had those shows where it's like the crowd is like, even though they're there for the show, they're not a normal comedy audience, so they're not really understanding. So I'm trying to yell over them, but then on top of yelling over them, the microphone is super loud, so I can't hear over myself. So I kind of just lost my voice, but that's just road comic stuff, man, that you just learn to deal with.
That is the thing that I think, especially like our audience, they listen to this show, they're fans of the Comedy Castle. They maybe don't know what it's like to see comedy at a bar or a restaurant or some outdoor patio or some places where these people do shows in little towns. It's wild.
No, it's different. It's different. Yeah. Like going to a small town that a drug dealer is promoting a comedy show. He brings you in and gives you money, pay you in all cash. It's steak, it's crab tail, it's lobster tail, crab leg.
Yeah.
People eating and enjoying themselves. And it's like, they getting all these experiences at once, and then it's still a comedy show in the middle of all this madness. So, they wouldn't understand.
Yeah. Well, I mean, maybe that's a good thing. Maybe that's why the castle's been there.
Allegedly, it was a drug dealer that
I did
show
for.
Allegedly, to protect the innocent or the guilty or whatever.
Money's money, baby. You got to go do it. You don't worry about
it. It's been the same.
You don't know. You don't worry about what they're doing, you know, how they're paying you. But, man, I did some of those on the road. My goodness.
Yeah, you hear those stories, man, and you get them on your own. You get the ones where you drive all the way to Green Bay, Wisconsin, and for $150, and it's just a bunch of pimps and prostitutes, because nobody showed up, because Ludacris is in Milwaukee. So nobody is in, all the audience is in Milwaukee.
Yeah.
No, it's just wild, man. It's a lot of stuff we've been through.
I had a guy, a guy left to show at a casino. He's in the front row. He had walked out of the Grand Funk Railroad show, which was in another part of the casino.
Yeah.
And I was like, I that sounds good to me. Maybe I'll go to, give me that ticket. I'll go to Grand Funk Railroad.
That's hilarious, man. That's hilarious. I'm just telling you, man, it's just a lot go on, man. Like, the behind-the-scenes stuff that we don't normally get to talk about only on podcasts.
Yeah.
He's funnier than the stuff we say on stage, man.
Sometimes people, I don't think they'd believe it when you hear how weird it is or how janky it is or, you know, whatever the situation.
No, and they don't get that this be the stuff you see before the person take off. Like, these are the experiences we have before you become Kevin Hart or Chappelle. And it's like, bro, and I think it's just the dues that you pay. So that way, I take it all. I'm grateful for it all because, man, I'm actually a comedian. Like, I always have to tell myself every day, like, oh, bro, I'm really a comedian. Like, people come to see me do a thing, and they pay money.
Listen, it's mid-April. You're a comedian on those taxes when you start making enough money.
Yeah, for sure. And I make enough of it. You know what I mean? Yeah. Other than the stuff I get under the table that the government don't worry about. You know what I'm saying?
They're not worried about that.
Yeah, but man, it's a good life, man. I can't really complain about it.
How's it changed? I mean, I don't know. You started probably a little bit after me, but you're 20 plus years in the game, right? So
yeah, Memorial Day. This year on Memorial Day, I will be at 20. So
yeah.
It just changed a lot because now I'm the old mean comedian. And I ain't really mean. It's just the new comedians come up and they be asking me questions and talking about stuff. And they don't want to hear that. It's like, you just get on stage and you write. That's it. It's no trick. Yeah. You can get as many followers on TikTok as you want. Mm-hmm. And once you put them people all in the building, if you ain't got no jokes, then you just not funny. It's like, you can't escape that, man. But as far as the change, man. I don't know, man. I know the scene here in Michigan is strong. I know I say that on a lot of podcasts, but like when I started, we were so small, but we all grew up together and graduated to be like very, very funny, strong comedians. And we all spread out and went to different places. And now the scene here is so good that you would never even thought that it was not a scene here 20 years ago.
Yeah. Well, I think that the internet in that has really helped people find comedy venues in a way. I mean, I found Club Bart in an article in the Detroit News. That's how I ended up there. They had pro.
So you didn't just frequent that place and it was
I lived out in Clinton Township and I had been to Ferndale because that's where you might go out for a drink once in a while, but I'd never been in that bar. And they had an article about open mic and they profiled all these comedians and I showed up. And one day just to watch, and because I had already kind of knew I was going to try comedy, but I didn't know how to do it. And when I found that place, I was like, yes, that's where I can go. But it took me reading the Detroit News, you know, the entertainment section, the lifestyle section, whatever it was called. And they just had a profile and it just a kind of a light bulb went off. And said, I got to go there. And
for the people that's listening. A newspaper is the internet that printed on paper, though. You don't scroll. You flip through it and you look and read. Yeah.
But when you talk about guys you started out with, I mean, a lot of that crew, Motown Laugh Kings, that was you, right?
Yeah, that was me and my guys, like Ron Taylor.
Yeah.
He and Austin, he got a special coming out. Yeah. Well, not a special, I'm sorry. He on Netflix on Funny as F, Funny AF with Kevin Hart. Yeah. Darius is down in Austin working. Jeff Horst in California doing his thing. I mean, so many comedians I can name. Nate. All these guys everybody is doing something.
Yeah.
And it's just crazy to see where we came from starting off as kids to adults. We full-fledged blue blood comedians. Mm-hmm. And we was molded by this scene we in now, man.
That's great, man. I'm proud of all you guys.
No, we appreciate it, man. Mm-hmm. Y'all showed us the way, man. You know, we didn't seem like we wanted to take y'all advice, but we was young and dumb.
Yeah.
That's what I'm telling young comedians now. It's like, man, you just got to take that advice when you get it. You understand it's good for you. You just think you can take over the world immediately. But it's like, bro, no, it's a process, and you're going to get to where you're going to go. Just take these lessons with you.
Yeah. It's fantastic. And you're now, so how much of your show, because, you know, I mean, I've seen it, and there's some of this, but when you're doing, you know, because it's such a thing with crowd work and you're really one of the best people I've ever seen that talk to an audience. But what's that balance there? Do you ever feel like there's a night where you're just like, all right, let's just talk to these people. Let's have fun with them. What's the how much of that is planned out?
Man, I have a set. You know, I write jokes, but it's just about you kind of filling the audience out. Like you can kind of feel when like it is like it might be something I might not do no crowd work, but then it come up and then something might happen and then you just get to rolling and then I had a set, but then I might only get to like 55-60% of it. Mm-hmm. So it's really on the crowd and wherever they want to go, man. We just having fun. Like
because
it's like 20 years, I gotta have fun up there too for me to even be able to do what I do, like to unlock, you know, the gift that I got. So it just be about having fun, Joel. And I know people hate crowd work, but it's like I don't know no other way to really do it. No. It's like telling Steph Curry you can't shoot the three. It's like this just is the gift that I have. I wouldn't be able to even do it any other way.
Right. Well, I think when it's done well, and I've certainly seen all facets and manners of crowd work, and I see the people that do it just, you know, they look at their watch and go, hey, what do you do for a living? You know, like I got to kill another 10 minutes.
Yeah, those are the worst, though. Like, it's bad when, you know, if you're up there not prepared and thinking that you got the ability to just go ahead and wing it, it's like, nah, you don't, man.
Yeah, you can't.
Like, it really takes, you got to have it. And then it takes time. It takes years to hone that skill set to know, like, how to weave the material in there and to be like, all right, I might not want to cover that because I know where this is going. Like, this person want to be the show. Yeah. And that ain't what it's about. Right. And then you got to make sure that the rest of the audience is enjoying the show too.
Absolutely. That is a good point because people want to take the show over. They want to be, you know, I mean, I did a little set last night and this, the first guy that was on stage was a guest. He's a former student and his son was in the front row and he made a joke about his son. And I asked if everybody was having a good time, and the son wanted to keep talking. And I talked to him for a second, and then it was like, let's move on. And he kept talking, and I had to ignore him and get through the set. And the kid, nice kid, I talked to him after. I go, look, you had a good time. He's like, yeah, I did. I was like, okay.
Well, you should have said, look, little homie, take the class, and if you want to be a comedian, you're not going to sit here and make your
That's a good point.
That.
See, that's why you're better at crowd work than I am.
That's what that was about, man.
Yeah, you're probably right, but it was all right. It, you know, you gotta love comedy students, man. The earnestness when they actually start to take it seriously. I just love seeing the light bulbs go off, or they do a thing and that we've been working on in class. They do it in front of a good sized crowd.
Well, let me ask you this: as far as the class goes, everybody ain't strictly doing it to start comedy. What other things do people be trying to do? But they just taking the class to help them.
Oh,
kind of like.
I mean, it just depends. I mean, most people want to do comedy, but other people find that it can just make them that they just there's like some people take like a college class. I feel like where they just want to learn more about it, even if if it's never a thing that they want to do. Because some people have great jobs. And they don't want to give up those jobs. They don't want to do, when I talk about, hey, man, go out, do 2-3 mics a week. And they can't do that, or they're retired, or they're one of those things. But some people just enjoy being kind of in it, you know, and understanding how comedy works and how comedians think and all of that stuff. But most people keep doing it. I mean, it really just depends. You know, what I like to see is that... you know, if you really have a skill for it, that you just don't quit, because the people that quit, nothing happens for. And you know this.
If you keep going, you'll fall into something.
And even if you're not talented, even if it's not easy thing for you to pick up, if you keep doing it, you will eventually pick it up. And that's the thing but we've all seen guys who are really talented coming out of the gate and they're having success at the open mic level and they just hit a wall.
Yeah. 20 years, I've seen a lot of people hit a wall.
Yeah, and they just go, it's not for me. I was doing it. I'm not doing it now. And it's you know what? You got to respect it, but
But then you just hold a little bit more, respect for the people that you see stick it out and still do it. Like, because it's so many reasons for you to just quit. Like, all right, you're not famous. You're not making a lot of money. You're not getting booked at all. But you just see people keep coming back. Right. And you be like, hey, bro, it's something about you, bro, that I got to respect it, you know? And then you look up and they finally figure it out. Yeah. And they find they audience and they working and they getting booked and they making money, you know, they making a little money. Yeah. And they having fun, man. So I love
to see
that.
Yeah, that's the thing. When you're not having fun, you shouldn't be doing it, but, you know.
Because there's so many people that's not. Yeah. They in it to be mean and. This person not funny. They stealing jokes. It'd be like, did you come here to stress rules? Like, have fun and be communal and maybe get a little bit of work and get in the newspaper here and there. You know what I'm saying? Like, bro, come on, calm down.
Yeah. Well, I got to ask you a question because you just brought it up, the whole stealing jokes thing. I always come to my students with this sort of take on that. Is I hear a lot of fans and, you know, internet people, Twitter people talking about comics that steal jokes. And I say, I don't feel in comedy that it's that big of a topic, meaning I think fans blow it up out of proportion. I said, as comedians, we all know people that steal. We all know those comics who, you know, mm-hmm. take a little bit of this, a little bit of that, and we don't like those people. But mm-mm. I think people think that we're going to get, like, there's more, I think there's more anger about it from fans than comedians.
Oh, yeah. No, comedians don't care. We kind of just move.
Yeah.
We move on. Like, it's nothing. It's just like, all right, somebody stole a joke. That's just what it is. It kind of like, it don't bother us at all.
Or we both made that joke about that thing, and it just happens to be the same because we're both funny. That's what I tell myself.
It's just parallel thinking. If y'all hang out at the same place, watch the same TV show, mm-hmm. you might have a joke about Harry Potter, or have a joke about King of Queens. That's just how it happens. So I always tell people, if y'all both got a joke about something, let's see it flesh all the way out, because y'all might not end up in the same place.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I always tell people that. I said, you know what? I think it secretly, we all know that the thing that we say on stage, it's an observation. You know, I always say that, you know, if you have a story about you and your uncle went on a fishing trip and there was a hole in the boat and the boat sank, someone could steal that and do that exact thing. But your thing about, going to Dunkin' Donuts in the morning and why was my coffee like this? Like, anybody can come up with that.
Anybody can do that, man. But I always say, just move around it. Because if you're funny and creative, you'll create more. That person will fizzle out because they ain't creative enough to, you know, create any material. So, and then they'll box themselves out, because then mm-hmm. people will be like, man, this dude's still, he eventually will steal jokes from everybody, and everybody gonna want to put him on the show because he gonna do everybody else set that night. So it's like, nah, I don't want to see everybody form tonight. We want to see you.
Yeah, that's the thing. Yeah, if you're stealing jokes, people like, and I always say this too about comedy, and this has been a thing that I guess I've always felt this, but now I'm really telling my students this, and anyone that wants to listen, is most of the work that you get is from other comedians.
Yep.
So you can't make the comics mad at you. If the comics don't like you, you're not going to have much of a career.
No, you're not. You're not. You got to be able to get along mm-hmm. with everybody enough. Even if it's people you don't like, you got to still be able to be on the show. Because just because you don't like this guy, now you can't get that. You're not going to take that booking because he on the show. Y'all mm-hmm. should be able to coexist even though y'all don't like each other. So you're right. You definitely got to be cool in this game, man. Mm-hmm. You got to be able, you're not going to love everybody, but you got to be able to work and do the thing that you love to do.
Yeah, don't start fights. Don't make feuds over, you know, a joke ain't worth it. That's a thing. Definitely that's a lesson that it, I learned. I learned that, and the guy stole my joke flat out.
Damn.
And I got mad at this dude, and he talked shit about me all over town. So,
man, you know, that's how people is. But like you said, man, you just gotta be water when it comes to certain situations, bro. Just be able to flow past it all, no matter what it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, let's talk about, because I know you're a guy that gets to play all these stages, which mm-hmm. is the thing that I think a lot of comedians are envious of, that Josh can get up anywhere. They open a new club and Josh is there. They do it everywhere. Tell everybody what the Comedy Castle is experiences versus other clubs and how that works out. Literally, even just from like the club, the stage, the lights, all of that stuff. Preacher Lawson was just talking to me about how big of a club the Comedy Castle is.
Oh, yeah. Really big club. The staff is great, man, top to bottom. Like, everybody need anything, let me know. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, once you get to sit in that green room and kind of just sit down, you start thinking about all of, like, the people who got to play this club.
Yeah.
And you realize that, like, this ain't no joke. Like, especially when you, like, walking through, going to the bathroom and seeing all of the headshots, like, not in mine up there. Yeah. It's just like, the same feeling that people describe walking in the Comedy Store in L.A. is what I get when I walk through Mark Reilly's Comedy Castle, man. And then the crowd is always, like, they ready to laugh. It's a diverse group of people. Mm-hmm. And they're very savvy as far as, like, anything you kind of kicking it about, they familiar with. And if they not, you can tell they just open to the experience.
Yeah.
So it's not too many clubs. Some clubs lean. Like, you know, some audiences, they just have a strong stance on what they believe, and you can feel it. Mark Reilly's to feel like, hey, man, if you're funny, you can come here and eat. You know what I'm saying? You're going to get off. We here to laugh. Yeah. Great laughers at the Comedy Castle. I don't know if that's special effects. They pumping in there. No. But they just great laughers.
Well, I'll tell you this, though. And I played rooms that, you know, the Comedy Castle is a tremendous room. But I've also played rooms where it seems like they just laugh at anything. And I feel like the Comedy Castle audience is real. Like, they're not faking it. They're not just laughing to laugh. They're, you've got to earn it on some level, you know? And if you are earning it, you're going to have the best set of your life. But I remember doing, like, Joey's Livonia. Those people laughed at anything.
Yeah, there was a lot of drugs going on in Livonia at the time. But you're right. You're right. It's hard to get laughs.
You got
to
earn them.
In Michigan, period. And then and Ridley's is the comedy club that shows you that, like, it's like, oh, these people, like, we pay real money to come here. Yeah. So if you're not funny, we ain't going to really give you what you're looking for. You can't just come up here and just say whatever. You definitely got to be on your... You got to be on your A game to be in there.
Or it's that maybe the Comedy Castle audience has seen decades of amazing comedians, the best in the world, come through there. And 100%, so they're not 100%. Just, you know, in small towns, they might just happy that anybody's in their town.
Yeah. No, not like really. This is Hollywood, man. Yeah. This is it, man. Right. So if you come in there, man, you got to, like you say, you got to bring your A game because some people will stare at you crazy. You know what I'm saying? So you definitely got to come with it, man. And that's why I be geeked anytime they hit me up for a booking, cause I know, hey man, everybody can't get into this club. This is one of the best places to do comedy. And I heard people on podcasts, TV shows speak on this club like it's a chain club, like it's an improv or whatever. Yeah. Whatever other club is, 14 of them. It's only one Mark Ridley, and I hear people speak on it with so much reverence. Yeah.
That's great. All right, let's get you out of here on this, and bring me up to speed. These Detroit Pistons, you tell me about them, right? Number one seed. Are they going to the finals? Are they winning it? Is this the year?
I mean, we won punctured lung away, man. Like, that's really what it comes down to. It's like, if Cuz can win with a half a lung, you know, that's what it is. Like, we our point guard hooping underwater. So, I don't know. I'm going to hope for the best and that we come through and just get hot when everybody else can't be hot and we can win it all. But, it's tough, man. I don't know, man. I don't know, Joe. We gonna see, though.
I know. I don't get to see enough of the games, but I know with playoff games, we're gonna be like at the club going, "Oh, is there a playoff game tonight? Oh man."
Yeah,
because people ain't gonna show up.
You hate it. You hate it as a comedian, but if your team is playing, you kind of like, I want them to keep advancing, but I hate that people steady looking at their phone because they're taking the score of the game. Yeah. But I hate for Detroit that every time we get a really good team, something like this happened, like Aiden Hutchinson just break his leg in a game. We up 40 points, and then out of nowhere, somehow our point guard puncture his lung. You know what I'm saying? It's like, I don't know what's up with that.
Don't know, but listen, we'll hope for the best. Hey, Josh, thanks for talking to me today. We're going to see you out there Thursday the 23rd at 7:30. It's a single show, so get your tickets for Josh Adams, people. Come on.
Get your tickets, man. Let's turn this Thursday into a Friday. Let's do it.
You got it, Josh. Hey, thanks for talking to me, dude.
No, thank you.
All right, man. Bye-bye. All right, Josh Adams, thank you. Fun talk, dude, as always. And thanks to Preacher Lawson for chatting with me. That was nice, too. He's bringing the whole family, Preacher Lawson, at this time. But we like his brother, Justin. He's been with us before. And we get to meet Mom. Yeah, it'll be fun. So come out, see Preacher. 5 shows, including a Sunday show next week on Thursday night, one night only with Josh Adams on the 23rd of April. It's going to be a great time. Hey, thanks to you guys for listening. Once again, the advanced comedy class is starting up this Saturday. If you want to call the club and sign up for that one, work with me for 6 weeks. Have a great showcase at the end of it. We've also got the beginner classes. If you've never done comedy, the great Bill Bouchard teaches the beginner comedy classes, the 101 classes. You'll dig those. All right. All right, guys, let's get you out of here. Have a great weekend. Have a great rest of your week. Hopefully we'll see you out for Preacher Lawson, Josh Adams. And thanks for listening. We love you. Bye-bye.